Well, it is approaching 7:42, it looks like, and we've got Andy Taylor joins us this morning here on the mighty 690 KGGF. Andy Taylor, of course, the editor of the Montgomery County Chronicle, and Andy and I are going to share a little history, kind of relive Coffeyville's storied past and talk a little bit about Grat, Bob, Emmett, and Bill Power.
There you are, Emmett Dalton, a fascinating character in Coffeyville history.
Yeah, and I think for the longest time I thought that when the Daltons came into town in 1892 and tried to rob the banks and the townspeople shot them, I thought they got them all.
They did
fatally.
Not. Well, they did a good job of shooting Emmett Dalton. I think on last count he had something to the extent of 24 different bullet wounds.
Yeah, he's so lucky he didn't die of lead poisoning.
Exactly. So in the Montgomery County Chronicle this week, as I do every year for Dalton Defenders Days, I try to take a unique angle on the Dalton raid. I don't relive the Dalton raid in my paper every year. I did some aspect of it. And this year I chose to follow what happened to Emmett Dalton after he was released from prison, which is a fascinating story.
In and of itself.
In and of itself. And just to refresh people's memory, of course, Emmett was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison in 1893. However, he became a model prisoner and also had this poorly wounded arm that was costing the state of Kansas a lot of money to help to preserve, in other words. So in 1907, which would be about 14 years after he was first put in prison, he was granted a full unconditional pardon by the governor, Governor Hoke, because he was such a stellar prisoner, and the state of Kansas did not want to pay to have his arm maintained. It was.
This sounds kind of familiar to the Nip Van tale.
It kind of does have that same story. There's parallels there, and a lot of characters are also in each story. So they released him, and he actually at one point while he was in prison, there was discussion about amputating his arm that the taxpayers would pay for, of course. That's why they basically shoot him out the prison doors and said, so long, live a good life, and don't come back. And he was able to save his poorly mangled, bullet-ridden arm, had surgery done on it in 1907 in Topeka. And then he came back to this area. Actually, one of the first stops he made was in Coffeyville. Late 1908. And he visited some friends, if you want to call them, even some of the people who were in the shootout in 1892, and also visited the unmarked graves. They were unmarked at that point, of his two brothers, Bob and Grattan, at Elmwood Cemetery. His older brother, Frank Dalton, is also buried there. He was a U.S. Marshal and was killed in the line of duty prior to all of this. So anyway, Emmett Dalton comes back. He gets married to a gal named Julia Lewis from Bartlesville. They live in Bartlesville in Tulsa. He gets involved in the real estate business. And one day he's given an opportunity to make a movie. And movies at this time were the newest entertainment rage across the nation. The moving picture, the photoplay, they were called. And Emmett was convinced to make this movie about the 1892 raid in Coffeyville and give his version of the story. Of course, it was a silent movie, and so he made it. Much to the consternation and the displeasure of the state officials who had released him from prison just several years before, they did not want him to capitalize financially on his criminal past. So Governor Hoke, the very man who pardoned him, asked for a face-to-face meeting in his office in Topeka, where Governor Hoke basically read him the Riot Act and says, you are not going to do this. You need to forget about the Coffeyville raid. Do not make a movie. Do not capitalize on your fame and move on with your life, because there's too many people out there that still have pain about what happened in 1892 in Coffeyville. But Emmett was no fool. He saw a way to make money with this legally and instead of illegally.
Right, yeah.
So he made this crudely made movie. Actually, it was made partially in Coffeyville. The city gave him permission to use the downtown plaza for a shooting of the film, that is, and to make this movie. And so it was produced with the help of a photographer named John Tackett. And that name is familiar because Tackett photographed the events of October 5th, 1892. So he was here making movie pictures. It was crudely made, crudely edited. And at the time, Emmett's intent was to make these movies known across the region, and he would go to these movie theaters and lecture after the movie about the ails of being an outlaw in hopes that it could sway people, especially the young kids, from going down the wrong path. That still didn't settle the nerves of the state's top brass. And when Governor Hoke was replaced by Governor Walter Stubbs in 1909, Governor Stubbs actually ordered the Attorney General of Kansas to find every legal avenue to have Emmett arrested and put back in prison. But they couldn't, because there was no, the pardon that was given to him by Governor Hoke was unconditional.
Yeah,
there were no stipulations attached to it. So the state couldn't do anything to re-arrest Emmett Dalton for showing this movie. It just basically was more of a bluff, and hopes that it may slow the profits into his pockets. In doing the research of this story, I found out that Emmett was making about $200 a day per time, every time it was being shown in a theater. And let's not forget that admission at the time was only 10 cents. So a lot of people had to be put in these movie theaters to make him money. He also wrote a book that was for sale for 25 cents a copy about his raid in October of 1892, and the state didn't like that either. Regardless, the state of Kansas made an effort to try to have Emmett Dalton put back in prison. It didn't work. Emmett Dalton became more popular as a result of this legal sparring match with the state of Kansas, and he became quite wealthy. He was actually arrested in Pittsburgh, Kansas, where the movie was being shown, and arrested because he was putting handbills or advertisements on telephone poles, which was against the city ordinances. So he had to spend a few hours in the city jail and pay a meager fine to be released. So that was the only other time that he found his time back behind bars as well. The amazing
hanging paper kind of got him in the jam.
Exactly right. the amazing thing that I find about this is Emmett wanted to make money. Early on, he wanted to make money the illegal way, of course, through these bank robberies of his brothers. He was quite under the influence of his older brothers, Bob and Grattan, who were truly outlaws, no question about it. They were killers. Emmett really didn't want anything to do with it. He just wanted to take advantage of the money they were getting from the bank robberies, but he found that was not the way to go. So anyway, Emmett Dalton toured the Midwest and all across the basically the part of the country by 1920, showing these films that he had made and doing these lectures about the problems of being an outlaw. And it was a great profit center for him. He got a lot of money, and eventually he moved out west to Los Angeles, California, where he became quite the real estate magnate and made a ton of money selling properties to areas that were now known as Hollywood. So he kind of laid the groundwork for the development of, you know, the growth of Los Angeles, California. And by the time he died in 1937, he was a millionaire, and which is funny because he was probably laughing all the way to the bank each and every day. He was making money, but still, he did that. One little anecdote to this is he was the one who helped pay to have his brother's tombstone put at Elmwood Cemetery because it was unmarked. The Dalton family did not have wealth. They were quite poor. So when the raid happened in 1892, the family did not have any money to give them a proper burial with a marked tombstone at Elmwood. And it was Emmett and his money later on, decades later, that helped procure that tombstone that we now see out there. The only way it was marked was with that iron pipe. If you go to the Elmwood Cemetery and see that iron pipe that now extends across the gravesites of Bob and Grattan Dalton, that was apparently, from what I understand, the railing that they hitched their horses to in Death Alley. And they actually, the city at that time, took that railing apart and used that to mark their gravesite.
Yeah.
Quite ironic. So,
yeah, it's a fascinating story from Coffeyville's past. And, you know, it's just when you think about Grattan, what he did with his life after
Emmett,
after he got out of prison. I mean, it's just you know, kind of a remarkable turnaround, although he was kind of, in some ways, thumbing his nose a bit at the person that released him.
Certainly was. And I think in the newspaper articles from that era, when there was this fight going on between he and the state officials, he basically said, these are, you know, showboat politicians, just that I'm a showboat showman. I like going out there and talking. They like going out there and talking. I should not bow to their whim just because they don't like my movie. So, there. Nanny do.
Take and, that. And it's amazing, you know, as you mentioned, you know, I mean, 10 cents probably would have been, a movie ticket, maybe a couple of movie tickets, depending on where you were.
That's
and
right.
To be able to clear $200 a day
right.
just for your part.
A pretty big deal.
Now, you know, people like to hear from bad guys.
They do. Absolutely. I guarantee you, if O.J. Simpson could go on this after-dinner speaker circuit, he would make millions of dollars. If I were to go out in the after-dinner speaker circuit,
you'd make nickels.
I'd make nickels. Exactly right. So that's just the way there's an intrigue to criminality. That's just the human nature of in America. We've always been fascinated by all of this. And at that time, the Dalton raid was the O.J. Simpson story of the day.
Yeah, in many ways,
truly was. I mean, nationwide, this story that happened 125 years ago today was the story across the nation. And so many efforts were made to think that this was the ending day of the Wild West, and it really wasn't. It kind of created a whole other era of outlaws. But it truly was kind of the end of the day when you would think, see the horsemen riding into town with guns blazing, ready to tear the town up. That was kind of the end of it. It was the end of the Daltons, certainly. One of the great ironies is that the very attorney who prosecuted Emmett Dalton was a man named J.R. Charlton. He was the county attorney in 1893. He also helped release Emmett Dalton from prison to convey the message to the governor at the time that Emmett was a model prisoner. He needed to come out and be a part of society. And, it's quite ironic that the same attorney that would put him behind bars is the same attorney that would get him out from behind bars.
Yeah, make the case for him.
Make the case. And I would encourage people, if they have never been to the Dalton Museum, Dalton Defenders Museum, to go do that this weekend. A great time to just invest a few minutes to check out the fantastic exhibits out there. And also, go watch the reenactment.
You've got four opportunities to see the reenactment on Friday and Saturday, and you definitely need to watch that to really get a deeper understanding of what happened here.
And one thing I noticed that kind of bothers me about how we look at the Dalton Raid is we think of it almost as a comic event, and it's not. I don't find mass shootings funny, especially this week. And at that time, when there were four outlaws killed, four defenders killed, three others wounded, and then Emmett. I mean, you had more than about a dozen casualties in a shootout that took 10 to 15 minutes. And if anybody ever reads Lou Barndaller's book, What Really Happened on October 5th, 1892, which is probably the best book out there on the Dalton Raid, she talks about that the shootout took 10 to 15 minutes, and the number of volleys of fire, of gunshot between those two groups, the robbers and the defenders, was in the hundreds. In fact, she contends in her book that's probably one of the biggest gunfights in the post-Civil War era. Unbelievable that was actually here, and the fact that there were citizens that took it upon themselves to go out there and face down these terrible outlaws who were known to the Coffeyville community. They were just here years before this as teenagers growing up. And fascinating story that there would be people actually going out and taking the gunfire fate head on. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a different time in our history for sure.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And of course, anyone who has an opportunity, they can pick up a copy of the Montgomery County Chronicle and read your full story there.
That's right.
And
it's called Double Trouble for Emmett Dalton. It's on page one. Can't miss it. And I encourage you to go buy a copy and read this fantastic tale about Emmett's post-prison life and what happened to him after Coffeyville.
Andy Taylor, editor of the Montgomery County Chronicle, always nice to have you in studio with us to talk about a piece of history from our collective past. So
yeah, let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.